Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, it doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Yes or no? Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
I had no prior knowledge of the planned assault on Nancy Kerrigan.
I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in.
Good morning. Happy New Week. It's Tuesday and we're Oops the Podcast as ever. Giulio Gallarotti, how are you?
I'm doing well, dude. How are you?
Good. I try to introduce our podcast every time as though I'm doing it for the first time and I have no idea what I'm doing. And I don't know if our listeners like it. I doubt they do.
I think they probably do like it.
Well, let us know, everybody. And thanks as ever for joining us on this new week. The days have bled into weeks, have bled into months. A lot of time has elapsed, even though it may feel as though it's not moving forward at all. Do you feel that way, Giulio, or do you feel that time is flying?
A little bit of both. Like in a very interesting way. The way, honestly, and I've said this before, but it feels the way summer as a kid feels.
Oh, that's like a very good way to put it.
You know, it flies by, but still during the day you find yourself where you're just like, time is just completely standing still.
Right.
On a day to day, you know, which is frustrating, man. And I voiced my frustration with you a little bit yesterday. I feel that like this is a great opportunity to like guilt-free do shit that I've always wanted to do, but like, it's just been hard to put it all together. You know what I mean?
Well, you mentioned wanting to go see the United States of America.
Yes.
And I've had other people tell me that they think this would be a great time to go on a trip to Europe or something. The problem is you don't know what's available. You don't know what restaurants are open. You don't know what hotels you could potentially stay at. It's not as if tourism as an industry isn't completely open.
And I understand that, but I would plan a trip around things that are open and the things that don't involve, you know, densely packed crowds. You know what I mean? Like okay. Nature. Kind of leaning towards nature, national park type of thing. Like, it's just such a good time to just get out on the road, I feel. And it's just been frustrating that I haven't been able to do it, figure out how to do it, really, just as far as logistics are concerned.
Right. And your girlfriend has a full-time job. So she can't be hiking in and out of, you know, the Grand Canyon during this time.
And that's so fine. I don't expect her to join me. Like, I'd be happy to do it alone. But there's some weird stigma about doing things alone. That like is stressing me out.
Here's what that stigma is. Have you seen the movie 127 Hours?
I have, yes.
Okay. Yeah, hiking into national parks by yourself can result in you having to cut your own arm off.
Did it happen in a national park?
I don't know if it was a national park, but he was certainly hiking alone.
Point made. But dude, I'm really easy to please. Like, I can go just drive or like, I'd be really happy just driving around a national park, not even getting out of the car. Like that would make me happy at this point.
Yes. Yeah. That would be cool. Let me tell you something, dude. I've gone skiing by myself and by day two, at least I started to feel like, wow, this is sucks. A lot of silence.
Yeah.
There's a lot of silence and that was skiing. So I was riding up chairlifts with people. I was, you know, stopping and getting a beer, whatever. If you're out hiking all day in a national park by yourself, dude, I mean, I don't know how your head works, but mine would start to really get some crazy thoughts, I think.
You know what? You're very right. Like, for example, I have two really good examples that stick out of this. First of all, I think I've mentioned this on the pod before, but I get drunk and book trips sometimes. So I booked this like 4-day weekend to Brazil.
You told me about this. This is amazing. Yeah,
so, but I had these kind of like 15-hour layovers intentionally in other countries on the way there and back. And it was really, really nice, but because it was a day and then I was with people and then one day and then with people again. And if I were to have just been alone the whole time, that would have obviously sucked. And I was also on the phone the entire time that I was alone, like calling people and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a better way to do it, is to have some kind of social, you know, Native Americans, there are certain tribes, I think, that would do vision quests, right? And that would be where a member would go out into the woods for the mountains for 2 weeks at a time and just be by themselves, right? And maybe they would smoke peyote and do some tripping and mushrooms. I don't know. This feels like a very culturally unaware accounting of something. But I would start to hallucinate by day three with or without stuff like that. And I would start talking out loud to myself. I just don't trust that my brain would keep it together if I were alone by myself in the woods for more than a week.
I mean, fair, dude. I've even driven like 10-hour legs by myself. I drove from Portland to San Francisco once and by myself. And by the end of that drive, I was really unhappy.
Yeah. Yeah. So be careful with yourself out there. I don't know. I'm worried about you. You know, we all know what happened. You burned down the entire state of Arizona once.
That's true. On a road trip, Colorado.
Dude, so let me tell you something. This weekend, my girlfriend and I went out to dinner. Actually, we went out to dinner both Friday and Saturday night, but Friday night was more of a casual. We were sitting at like this picnic table place having lobster rolls. It was great. And we had oysters and stuff. And that was really fun. But then on Saturday, we had an official planned dinner. And I think the reason for this was that Saturday was my girlfriend's dad's birthday, and he passed away a couple years ago. Mm. And so it's kind of a weird day for her, you know, one of celebration, but also like happy memory tears that kind of sprout up at any moment. By the way, have you ever dated somebody whose parent has passed away, with a parent who's passed away?
No, but I dated somebody whose dad left the family and he moved like 20 miles away and she never saw him again, which is
20 miles. That's it.
He left the family, moved 20 miles away. But he was like the town over. Fucked up. Sorry for
it.
But
was
but
it like he moved from like Manhattan to Queens? Cause that like, can be big.
He moved from like Brooklyn to Long Island.
Oh, interesting.
Crazy. But anyway.
Well, okay. So my point is, right, that, you know, there are 3 days of the year that are really tough for her. It's her father's birthday, Father's Day, and then the day that he died. And
it's really fucking hard.
I have to put all these days in my calendar to be very sensitive to them, because she doesn't, now that we're going into our second year, we're almost at our second year of dating, she doesn't expect me, or she does expect me to remember them, and she doesn't always tip me off now. And these, I mean, three days of the year to get really down about that, like, that it's a lot of days to be affected, and she deserves to be, but like
totally
to have that day effect, you know, crop up and just be a tough day to get through. And I think it's getting easier, but I have to say, dude, at some point I would think, and tell me if this is really insensitive, I would think that she should stop thinking about the day he passed away and just celebrate the birthday and Father's Day.
Right. I think that I don't, you know, knock on fucking wood, I don't understand what that feels like yet. And I have friends who have had parents taken away from them unexpectedly. And I don't know what the situation was with her, but I think that it's impossible for me to say. I think that it would be really nice to have the attitude of like, all time is borrowed time. It was so nice to have had him at all. Like, it was an incredible, we had an incredible run together. I loved him so much, and now he's gone and he was a great guy. And like, I think that that is that there's a way to do that, but it's almost impossible to separate that from the nostalgia or the sort of sentimental tears at the very least.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. And I'm also just musing here. I'm not saying she can't acknowledge that the day he died wouldn't be something that she would be affected by. But I guess as more and more time goes on, you know, it's just more fun and easier to celebrate his life, I guess. But anyway, whatever.
No, I get it. Dude, listen, I get it. And I think like it's very valuable. And I'm sure that there's times where like, maybe you see her grieving and you're like, it's hard for you to see her so upset all the time, like so regularly. And I get that you're not being insensitive. Like, I just can see how that comes from a place of you wanting her to be happier.
Yeah, of course. And the other problem is, all of these dates are very close together. And so actually maybe that's better, because then for the rest of the year, it's not just kind of once, it's not staggered such that it comes up and you're always thinking about it. But in this period of the year, Father's Day, the day he passed away, and his birthday, I think it's all within like a month and a half. And I mean, it's just rough, you know?
Dude, totally.
But here's the thing, ready? So I decided, my girlfriend's been absolutely sensational during this whole quarantine coronavirus. Just, you know, not that she wasn't grown up before, but she has taken on the duties of like our rock, our cement pillar, our foundation of strong-willed, you know, keeping us on the level.
Dude, I wasn't sure if this was a metaphor or not.
No. Yeah. She's been, it is. She's been so steady and has been, I've just been trying to chip away and to carve her into what I want her to be. No, she's been amazing. And I have not been. I've had some really tough days where I just can't handle my emotions. I've reverted to being a four-year-old at times. And so to honor and thank her, I got her some jewelry. I got her a nice bracelet.
Nice.
From a company called Ring Concierge. Have you ever seen this?
No, I'm going to Google it right now. It's fancy.
Yeah. Well, it's whatever. I don't know. It's not that fancy, but they're on. Yeah. So I got her this bracelet, right? And she wasn't expecting it at all. And that's part, by the way, giving a girl jewelry when she's not expecting it, fantastic. What a better situation than like a birthday or Valentine's Day, I guess, or your anniversary. Because it makes them so much happier. It makes them think that you're a good person, at least for a day.
Love it.
Yeah. So I got her this bracelet, and I'm planning to give it to her on Saturday night. Part of me thought giving her this on the day that her dad passed away might be insensitive in a weird way, but also would help her just feel better on a shitty day.
It's an emotional stimulus package.
Yes, exactly. So we go out to dinner, and we go out to a nice place in Freeport where we are, and it's this great restaurant, and they've got beautiful outdoor seating, tiki torches planted into the bushes. There's a fountain and a fire pit and a bunch of like really nice outdoor tables with umbrellas, and it's crowded. And two tables away from us is there's one dude and three women, right? And they're being loud, but not, we wouldn't have noticed it. At one point, this guy starts sneezing, and he sneezes five sneezes, all of which were very wet sneezes.
Oh God, I feel bad for people burdened with those kind of sneezes, man.
You feel bad for him?
It just, I mean, he can't help it. It's disgusting, and everyone hates him and thinks it's gross. So like, I feel bad for myself, but him as well.
Okay, fine. Exactly. I hated him. I hated this guy.
Terrible.
And because his efforts to block the sneezes were kind of like in pickup basketball when you play token defense. Like, you know, you make it seem like you're getting back on defense. This guy, it was token sneeze blocking. Like,
right. Just like dabbing, basically.
Yeah, dabbing, exactly. It's almost as if he was using his body as like a shield to deflect the particles off into the restaurant as disparate a spread as could possibly be. Five times what he did fuck? This. Then, and keep in mind, I'm now trying to come up with the right way to present this beautiful gift that I've spent a lot of money on. I'm trying to think of the speech I want to give her to really butter her up for this great gift. And it's very romantic, big night, lot at stake here. Dude, no joke, he finishes his five sneezes, and then this guy, I shit you not, hawked two loogies over his shoulder into the bushes.
Horrible.
In the middle of a restaurant.
Right as you were attempting to give the ring?
You know, I was like kind of waiting for the moment. And yeah, I was like thinking, you know, like this is the place. This is the mood. It's not a ring. It's a bracelet.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't proposing, but like, you know, dude. And then, so he like full on summons the loogie, like, and then spits it, and then does it again. I'm talking hook shot over his shoulder. Ugh. This was not like he didn't get up and walk to the edge and spit into the bushes. He just did it from a seated position.
Jesus.
Lou Alcindored his hook shot loogie into the bushes at the base of the tiki torches. Ugh. The women at his table, one of them goes, "You're disgusting. You are disgusting." And he goes, "Hey, I can't help it. I don't give a shit. This is who I am. I'm white trash."
Okay.
Dude, I was so angry and so astonished by this because, look, I don't mean to Karen myself here, but if you're hawking loogies in the middle of a pandemic, like, that's biological warfare.
It's gross for sure.
I mean, if we'd been inside, it would be as if he just spat loogies against the wall of the restaurant.
Ugh, dude. Very vile. But also, I'm surprised that you're at a place that this guy's also at.
Well, I'm surprised that he was at a place I was at. Well, these entrees weren't cheap. I mean, where did this, what Powerball ticket did he win to celebrate this night with his ladies? I don't know, dude. So like, you know, we had to recover from that. And then the waitress came over and I didn't know what to do. Like, what do you do in that situation? Because if he continues to do that through the dinner, it's going to be hard for me not to go say something to him. And I feel like this is the type of guy who the moment I say anything is going to stand up and fight me.
Right. It's tough, man. Those kind of guys are tough because it's never worth it. But at what point are you just going to let this guy fucking walk all over you? Like, at what point do you stand up for yourself?
Yeah. So the question is, okay, me telling the waitress and then having her tell the manager is me tattletaling. That's like the ultimate Karen move, I think.
It's just it's just whack, dude. You don't.
But if I tell the dude, you know, I'm embarrassing him. I don't think he's pretty clearly not abiding by the rules of society. So he's going to get up and be like, "Why don't you tell me? Why don't you make me stop spitting?" Maybe he gets up and hawks a loogie in my face. And so, you know, what's the move there? What is my recourse?
And that's the other thing, dude. You don't want to like be visibly affected by it because that means you're not doing anything and then your girlfriend will think you're a pussy. And that sucks too.
Right. So what do you think I did?
I don't know. Now that you're saying, what do you think I did? I'm assuming that you maybe did something. But if you were to have not told me any of this, I would have guessed that you would have just completely ignored it.
No, I told the waitress, I Karen. I went full Karen.
And what did she even do? Like,
she couldn't, she almost like didn't believe what we were saying because it was so astonishing. Like, nobody's ever seen that before at a restaurant. And so she was like, oh my God, that is disgusting. And I was like, I said, look, I laid it on her gently. I wasn't like, bring me your manager or whatever. I was like, look, this is what just happened. You know, we're pretty grossed out. It's pretty unseemly. It's not as if we could have moved to a different table to be out of his sight line. The restaurant was so small outside that everybody saw this guy do this. And so she goes, I'll let my manager know, you know, and she offered that. And I was like, okay, great. Because if he'd continued to do it, I mean, you can't fucking do that at a restaurant. What?
And not to mention, bro, during a pandemic.
Yes. Yes. Honestly, the sneezing, I say the sneezing thing is the groundwork to say that this dude did not seem well.
Right.
So his loogies were probably of a higher toxicity than normal loogies. You know, these things are going to burn a hole through the earth down into the molten core and contribute to, I don't know, erosion or something. I don't know, dude. I was pretty shaken up. So finally, I wait enough time and I give her the bracelet and she was blown away. And it's been great since then. We had some very wet sex as a result.
Really? Very nice.
Very lubricated. Yeah.
Have you guys, has like living together under these conditions affected, you know, your patterns regarding that kind of stuff or what?
You know, I'm glad you asked that, Julio. I would say that living together has a little bit because we have become so mechanical about so many aspects of life, meaning there is such a clear division of labor in our relationship. Like, we each have chores to keep the house moving, right?
Right.
And, you know, she admittedly is like, does the laundry. I make the bed. I, you know, clean up the kitchen and do the dishes if they're ever there. And she does all these other things. And so we're so busy and there's always something like that to be done that it can get in the way of those moments of where, you know, those heightened moments of passion or whatever, like where you're looking at each other or something that often lead to sex.
Right.
And so we have less of that. And I'll add that having this little dog around that we have, the French bulldog, that dude has blocked my cock more than anybody I've ever met.
Is his name Kojai?
Kojai, yeah. Because he's always around and he's always looking at us. And if we start to like, we can't fool around, you know, in order for us to have sex, we have to set up a doggy gate at the base of the stairs so that he doesn't follow us upstairs. And then we go upstairs and close the bedroom door. Because if we go upstairs and just close the bedroom door, he follows us up and scratches on the door being like, let me in. I want to be part of this. I got to be part of this all the time. So I would say we've just had to make more of an effort to, set us up for sex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more predetermined, but, fortunately we're conscious of it. And so we're trying harder to have sex like twice, you know, at I would say at most three times a week.
It's pretty solid.
It's not bad.
It's not bad.
How about you? How are things for you?
They're good. I mean, you know, we were apart for so long that, like, you know, it wasn't, you know, when we started seeing each other, obviously we want to do all that stuff, but you know, now it's like, but it's the same. Like, I feel like, that kind of like spontaneity that I'm kind of like used to, is, you know, it's harder to accomplish, like you said. So yeah, it kind of becomes more of like, it's very obvious at those times when like when you want to be doing stuff like that, as opposed to like, you know what I mean? Like, I know that like, that's what's going to happen.
It's protracted. It's telegraphed. Yeah.
Totally.
So here's the thing I wanted to ask you. This is something I was thinking about. Would you say that you're good at sex right now?
No.
Dude, I'm so glad you said that. I would say that I am really not good right now.
I feel really bad about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think my sex game, my moves, I am operating, you know, with a lot of, I should retire. I should not be doing this anymore.
Dude, totally.
I'm past my prime.
Dude, it's a tough realization. I'm feeling the same way. And I hope that this is just a thing that is temporary. We get a second wind.
We need a second wind so badly.
We need a second wind, dude.
I used to feel, and maybe I was wrong, maybe I was delusional, but I used to think when I was like younger that I was good at it. You know what I mean? Like I would put in effort. I would really use up my arsenal of moves. I would spend time on foreplay. I would kiss a lot, eye contact, be constructive and creative in my dirty talk. You know what I mean? I would suggest new things. I was putting legs in places that didn't belong. I whatever it was, I felt like I was really summoning all the spells that I had at my disposal.
This is maybe what we needed, man. I'm getting fucking rocked up over here.
Come on, guys. Don't come give on, guys. Up. Find that second wind. But, dude, the thing, too, is just like I do feel bad. I feel bad that my poor girlfriend is just receiving, like, the most B-minus efforts from me. I don't know. And I wonder what she would say, because I wonder what she would say about her own performance, like how she would rank her own performance, you know?
Mm.
She's still trying, for sure.
Because, dude, that's the thing. You know, like you said, the whole kind of like wonderful process of a sexual experience is such a nice thing. Like you said, just kind of like taking your time and not rushing anything, whatever. And in order for that to be the case, you know, both people need to be participating. So if you are just immediately checking out and not willing to do that, like what can she do?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not her fault.
I agree. She can only really match my commitment and enthusiasm.
Your lack thereof.
Yeah. Oh, I feel bad. I really do. Because let me tell you this. I am so bad right now at sex that if I were to like suggest that we start wearing costumes or do some role play or, you know, maybe anal beads, whatever. if I were to suggest that, it would be such a crazy departure from where we are that it would be jarring and weird.
She'd be like, what am I not doing?
Well, no.
Why are you introducing this? Like, there's always some suspicion.
Maybe. Right? I think she would be more receptive to it, or even be like, I'm so glad you brought that up. I've been wanting you to put beads in your butt for a while. But
in your butt?
I think whoever's butt, you know, I don't know. Okay. Whoever needs it. I had a pretty upset stomach the other day. I could have used a plug. So my point is, we couldn't just go from where we are now to Princess Leia, Jabba the Hutt, you know, Jabba's prison. That we couldn't do that.
Right.
We'd have to like work our way up, because if all of a sudden we saw each other and we're trying to play out some crazy fantasy like that, we would just start laughing.
Right.
You know, and I've found that laughter is a pretty serious boner killer.
Yeah, it can be, but it doesn't have to be,
but I'm not turned on when I'm like giggling like a buffoon.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know, dude. I'm so glad you said
that. Phoning it in.
We're not good at sex. Our best days are behind us.
Our best days are behind us, dude. Guys. If you're thinking about starting a podcast, fill in the blanks here. If I were in a concert right now and I said, if you're thinking about starting a podcast,
I'd then turn the microphone to all of you sitting in the stadium, and you would all yell, "Anchor, Anchor." And then you'd say, go to anchor.fm to download the software where you could host your very own podcast, see all the best analytics. You could see it in a way that was really user-friendly and nice and not too technical and industry jargony. It's a way that any person can look at it and be like, ooh, that's pretty. And also it's our podcast. And there's no minimum listenership required to advertise and monetize. So you can immediately have ads when you hit the ground running. It's really exciting, really spectacular. If you want to start your very own podcast, anchor.fm, download it now.
We could get a second win. Dude, this is why a lot of guys get on the Viagra, you know?
I feel like you should push off that moment until I know a couple kids who like are in their mid-20s and consider themselves post-sexual because of how much Viagra they took as teenagers.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to do it until I need it, you know? And that's the other thing. Boners aren't my problem. I've got boners. I've got plenty of boners to give her. I just am not that inventive with what I do with it.
Dude, I'll tell you what. I have a pretty good Viagra story.
Great.
Not going to lie. I took it one time. Half of one.
Oh, boy.
All right. So let me just preface this by saying that day I had a full day of exercise. I biked like 30 miles and played a tennis match. Intense, right? So I'm kind of tired, dehydrated, whatever. And then we like start partying. I start drinking on an empty stomach and the stars align. And this girl ends up coming over to this party we're at. She kind of very quickly is like, why don't we go upstairs? It's like 6:30.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. So we kind of leave the party. We go upstairs and we start kind of messing around a little bit. And she, pants come down and I am having my poorest showing I've ever had in my life. Like we're talking like acorn situation. And I see the disappointment in her face that. She's kind of like, oh, wow. Like what a bummer. Like she'd never seen it before. You know what I mean? And like, I don't know about you, but I have definitely like a very large spectrum of like my situation. Like my smallest is sad. And then like the opposite of that is like perfectly acceptable. So whatever. So she's kind of like, oh, like, why don't we just go, like, let's just go back to the party. And then maybe like later you'll be ready or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of like, fuck, I'm just like, I blew it. Like, she's so like, she thinks I'm a loser, like whatever. So now we're down at this party and she kind of like every once in a while just keeps checking in. And I'm just feeling like there's no way that it's going to work. So I remember one of my friends is like, dude, I have Viagra. So I'm like, can I please have half of that? He's like, sure. So I take it and I just start checking my fucking watch. Before you know it, she's like sitting on the couch talking to some kid who's like 18. And she kind of keeps looking over at me. And then at one point she kind of was like, I'm sure he'll be ready to go. I was like, oh my God.
This is
humiliating. Yeah. So I'm like going behind the building of like, we're like a pool house. I'm going behind the pool house, like trying to like get myself going, like
fluff it up. Yeah.
Fluffing it up.
Potatoes with a fork. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dude. So fucking, I'm so stressed. I'm like, the pressure is so high. I need to, cause this is also a situation where this girl knows a ton of our friends. I don't need this awful scouting report.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
So finally she's like, are you ready? And I'm not, but I'm like, yes. And the way over there, I'm like pumping myself up. We get in the room. We kind of start touching whatever. And all of a sudden, dude, like this, like Excalibur, my dick just explodes. And I just unsheath this like fucking sword. And she's just like, oh, and she even was like, oh, she's like, thank God. Yeah. She's like, I thought I was really, she's like, I was really disappointed. And it did, it was like insane. So then we had this incredible time. And then the next day as a joke, I got her tattoos or her initials tattooed on me.
Oh my God.
I thought that this story was a great tale of like triumph of the human spirit.
And you wanted to immortalize her forever?
Like as a joke. We never slept together yet.
Uh-huh.
But that will forever. It's all right here on the side of my leg.
Oh my God. How does your girlfriend now feel? Have you told her that story?
No. And I was kind of I'm a little hesitant about it, to be honest.
We definitely often play by the rule of, well, our girlfriends aren't listening to the podcast, and just, fingers crossed, like they don't tune in. Dude, you talk about
mine. I think mine does listen though. We'll see.
Yeah, you talk about the spectrum you mentioned, the huge spectrum. We my friends came up with referring to it almost as like the periodic table of the elements in terms of boners, right? Because certain metals have a higher hardness than others, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's like gold, which is pretty good. Silver is not a good boner. Silver's not a good boner. Gold is solid, and then platinum is, you know, the platinum unit is a very good one. But the tin foil unit is the absolute worst. Ugh. The aluminum foil swan origami penis. That's when you're just splinting it in with your finger and hoping it inflates. But tough days, man. Yeah. Dude, do you remember growing up when, like, if you struggled to get a boner, you just assumed you were gay?
Yeah, but there was
other people would assume it, like they'd accuse you of being a closet homosexual if you couldn't get an erection with a woman.
I also remember some kind of like weird homoerotic bullying.
Yeah,
involving that.
That's all part of it.
That's all part of it. Okay, yeah, that was a weird thing.
Dude, I had a friend who would tell me that he'd heard from other girls about certain dudes we knew who couldn't get it up. And then he would just he would extend that to meaning that they were gay.
That's which is, so dumb, yeah.
Is such an insane mental leap. I mean, to me, there could be so many reasons why you cannot achieve an erection, right?
Right.
It could be that the air conditioning was too strong, or you were nervous, or the person you were sleeping with you didn't want to be with. I mean, you know. A lot of stars had to align, I guess, for some people.
And dude, there's also like momentum too. Like if you have one weird, really weird, bad sexual experience, mm-hmm. like the next three or four, you might have trouble.
Yeah.
And then you snap out of it eventually. But
yeah, dude. So I don't like that theory that I don't like people who just say if a guy can't get a boner, it means he's wishes secretly that the person he was with was a man.
I think that whoever is administering that game is the gay one, most likely.
Could be. You know? I've also heard girls say it, though, you know? But I get it. Like, that would be frustrating, you know, if you present yourself naked for a man and start performing something on him and he's not responding. Like, that could be humiliating.
Right. Yeah, there's a good kind of, like... And also there's a good incentive to do that because the alternative is that he didn't like you. When in reality, there's something going on with him.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's unlikely that it's a sexual preference.
Maybe he didn't like his father, you know? It could be a lot going on. You don't know. Don't give yourself so much credit.
Drugs, alcohol, I don't know. Have you ever wet the bed as an adult?
No. Fortunately, I have like a Hoover Dam block in my bladder such that I'll wake up at, you know, 4 a.m. having to pee so badly, but I'll run to the bathroom. But I don't have that release. I don't have that seal breaking mechanism in my unconscious state.
That's good. You? I mean, no, but one time I did, but it was because I was fucking wasted.
Yeah, I think that happens to a lot of people.
Okay. Well, I remember doing it. Like, I drank a bunch of beers, which I don't typically do. So I was in college, and I drank a shit ton of beers. Actually, 3-6 Mafia was performing.
Cool.
And the sound system like broke down halfway through the performance, like during the first song. And then it was whatever. So anyway, I ended up going back. And then I remember waking up in the morning, and the bed was wet. And my girlfriend at the time was at the apartment. And I remember looking over at her without like investigating, without looking. And I was like, did you fucking wet the bed? And she goes, are you serious? She goes, why don't you stand up and look at the bed?
Good for her.
And I do that. And my body was clearly in the epicenter of the ring of pee. Like it was obviously me.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then I had the worst hangover I ever had that day. So I think that, I guess there's a way that it can be done. But that I know people who have problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That sucks.
I have a friend who stopped drinking for 3 years because he was wetting the bed so much.
Damn, dude. That sucks.
Dude, he didn't drink for 3 years and was the guy who would order, you know, what happened, by the way, was that he would end up drinking like 15 seltzer waters a night at the bar. And he didn't know. He didn't still wet the bed, but it's like, you know, you have to wonder, like, at that point, because he didn't. You think that if you're not ordering drinks at the bar, right, booze, then you don't really have to keep pace with the same number of drinks. But he would match our drinks with seltzer. And that's like, that's so much carbonation. Like, that would just.
Dude, carbonated water doesn't hydrate me, by the way. Sorry, keep going.
No, I agree. For me, it gives me like, I don't want to say heartburn, but some kind of. Throat inflammation.
Yeah, I don't.
I get the hiccups. I don't like it. Anyway, he finally came back out. He started like testing the waters, drinking again, and now I think he's found a pretty good balance, which is cool because you don't often. I mean, he thought he was an alcoholic, and there were those of us who sort of said, "Yeah, dude, you gotta tone it down a bit." But then he came back out of it, and he's got a much healthier relationship with alcohol.
Well, dude, that's funny. It's funny you say that because I wonder if like, and I don't know if this is a taboo thing to say, if there are different levels of having an alcohol problem, like, is it possible to be kind of like a little bit of an alcoholic? Like, I don't know, but it's the same way it is with allergies maybe where like, if you just take a complete fucking break from the thing and reintroduce it into your diet a year later, you'll be fine a lot of the time. And I wonder if that's what happened with your friend with alcohol. And I wonder if, you know, with the proper amount of focus and time, if more people couldn't like benefit from doing that, from just like taking a break from drinking and then slowly reintroducing it in a more responsible way. I don't know.
I think there's two sides to this argument. And one is, okay, I see a lot of people do sober January or dry January or whatever it is. I get annoyed at that for some reason, because almost always it's friends of mine that really have no problem with alcohol, right? And they're just doing it almost like for Lent or some, I don't even know why, what their reasons are, to prove to themselves that they could do it. And then they come back to it. And I have this theory that having a healthy relationship with alcohol basically, and by the way, I apologize if this is totally ignorant, but my theory is that like a healthy relationship with alcohol means you can have one drink a night, 4 or 5 nights a week, and come in and out of it. You don't miss it. You don't need it. Whatever. That's fine. Whereas to hop on and off the wagon and dealing in extremes like that, to me, it lays a pattern of a harder, you're setting yourself up for a less healthy relationship with alcohol. But I could be wrong about that. I could.
Right.
But to your point, there are people, yeah, that I think can benefit from really like just saying, whoa, I need to take like a year off, or sure. And you hear this happening a lot. And unfortunately it happens a lot in comedy. You know, you hear like you run into a comedian and it's like, yeah, I haven't had a drink in 18 months. And you're like, well, fuck, dude. I mean,
I get it because of how easy it is to kind of develop a bad drinking habit while being in comedy, because you're out every night, you know, drinks a lot of the time are free or cheaper, or and the bartender, like, you know, the comedy clubs that I'm at the most often, like my drink's ready for me sometimes before I even ask for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I agree. I think that it's important to try to be able to kind of like develop a healthy relationship with it, because there's plenty of, you know, comics who also can drink a little and be fine. So right. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. You got an email we want to share?
I got a good email, yeah. So great. We asked people to kind of share with us at some point stories about kind of, you know, mixing races and cultures and kind of anecdotes revolving around that. So we have a good one from, this is funny too, from a Karen. Her name is Karen.
You have to change your name at this point, by the way, if your name's Karen. Sorry.
Hey, Francis and Julio, love the podcast. Been listening since day one. You guys always make me laugh and have helped me get through this year. Thank you, Karen, likewise. So here's the story. She goes, my name is Karen. I'm a white girl. Obviously my name is Karen. My husband is Pakistani and being with him has really opened my eyes to what people of color go through in America. His parents are Muslim and it took a while for them to come around and accept our relationship. We've been together for 2 years when he got a job that relocated him from Michigan to North Carolina. I made the decision to move to North Carolina with him and start the next chapter of our life. His parents were not happy and cut off communication with him for an entire year.
Oof.
I was struggling with feeling guilty about what was going on with his family. I knew we could not progress our relationship until that had changed. So after a year, I decided to throw a Hail Mary and write them a letter.
Wow.
Which I think this is great. I wrote and introduced myself and highlighted how much I love their son and how happy we make each other. I even pulled a Karen and scented the letter with lavender. Very nice.
Oh my God.
About a week after they got the letter, they were open to meeting me. They had also relocated to North Carolina, so we went over there and things began to turn around. We got to know each other and took time to talk. They literally went from not accepting us at all to wanting us to get married.
Oh my God.
Great, right? My parents came down a few months later to meet his parents. Fast forward a year later, we got married. Not only did his parents come around, but his extended family did too. I never could have imagined the impact that letter would make on our life.
Wow.
That's great. And that's honestly, great. Dude, like this is a perfect example of what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that you think is so bad and so different and so this and so that is great because love really is a thing that can kind of trump all of these other things.
It's very sweet. And I would also say that the impact of a handwritten letter is impossible to overstate. Whether it's a thank you letter or an apology letter. Yeah, especially if it's scented with a little anthrax.
It's just drugging your husband's parents.
Yeah. But dude, I also have another easy solution for this girl, right? Like her name's Karen. The day she meets his parents who are Muslim, she should just be like, oh, it's actually pronounced Quran. Like the Quran.
They would be like, get out of our house.
I mean, why wouldn't she? Why wouldn't she? Hi, my name's Quran, your holiest scripture. I don't know. Maybe that's not a solution. Maybe that's just me being silly, but I feel like it's an easy way to get them on your side.
Well, I thought you were going to say converting. And I wonder if she had to.
Yeah. I wonder.
It's funny, dude. I've heard, I know people who's like, and this is just from what I've experienced. I could be completely wrong, but I've noticed that typically the woman is the one converting.
Yeah.
But I know situations where the guy has.
I think that depends on the religion, but I could be wrong.
Like I know a guy who became Jewish.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Like I think in certain faiths it's more likely that that would happen versus the other way, but I really don't know.
Here's my question to you. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to convert faith for a person that you were with who you loved?
I think so, and I think that the reason is that I'm pretty faithless.
Right.
And so that I'm not like tied to any belief system right now. And that if I felt like it meant a ton to the family or meant a lot to the person I was with and I really loved that person, it would be kind of just a very nominal, meaningless, I hate to say meaningless thing, but like it wouldn't bother me, you know?
You're like, okay, sure. See, it's funny. I have trouble with the idea of that. Like, I don't know if I could do it.
Is that because you are strongly rooted in your current belief system or because you wouldn't want to be with somebody who would ask that of you?
My current belief system is ever evolving and I'm open-minded, but I'm not by any means any denomination of anything.
Right.
I believe maybe I don't know. I try to think about it as little as possible, to be honest.
Maybe yeah, me too.
Maybe I should start thinking about it more. But there seems something so extreme and unnecessary about it. Like, why can't we coexist being different? Like, why do I have to become your thing now? Because like you liked me before. And like me just saying, okay, I'm the thing is good enough now. Like there's something about that. And I get the like, well, the family, the values, but you know, my girlfriend once said this, and I think this is a really nice sentiment. And she's like, why can't kids learn about multiple ways of believing in stuff. Like, isn't that like potentially a really powerful thing? And like, I think she's right personally. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That is, you know, you hope for that, obviously, but I think a lot of the wars that we've seen in the world would tell you otherwise.
Of course. And, but to your point, dude, like, and like you said, you hate to say that it's meaningless, but if you're like, okay, yeah, sure, I'm that now. Like, how is that different? Like, I don't know.
You
know,
it almost seems insulting if, you know, their family asked you to convert and you were like, sure, I'll do it. But you didn't give a shit and they knew.
Right.
Because then what's the point? Then you're just like an offensive tourist in their religion.
Exactly.
You're a false worshiper.
Yeah. And like all these like little loopholes and you know what I mean? It's all like bullshit. I mean, it's bureaucratic bullshit to keep the religion alive. I don't know.
I do agree with that. I think the bureaucracy of religion is pretty stupid. And
it's really insulting.
Dude, I was watching an episode of Rami, and this was fascinating. You know, he went on a date with a girl, and she was very sexually forward, and they had been arranged by their parents. And of course, he assumed the whole time that she was this conservative Muslim. And I think she was, but at the end of the date, she tries to like get him into her car and have sex with him, which is very surprising to him. And he's like, I don't know, you know, if I'm comfortable with this. And she goes, oh, no problem. I can call my uncle or something and he'll marry us for the next 20 minutes and then we'll get divorced so that we are having sex within our marriage.
Right, right. And dude, that's a fucking real thing.
Dude, that, and then like if you hear stories about girls losing their anal virginity because they're saving themselves from marriage.
Right.
Who are you fucking kidding?
I know.
Like, if you really believe that, then you have to also acknowledge that the Bible says that sodomy is a crime. And therefore, like, you're cherry picking right. which parts of the faith apply to you. And I find that to be hypocrisy at its finest. But I don't mean to take down religion in entirety.
No, it's okay, man. It's true. Like, there are pleasure marriages too in like some Middle Eastern countries. And what ends up happening is it ends up becoming like sex trafficking of minors. So these guys who are married, they get in these pleasure marriages that are blessed by a cleric. And then it's just bullshit. And obviously that's denounced by the mainstream church
right,
or whatever.
Right.
But still, like you said, it's like, we'll do it or don't do it.
Right. Damn,
but Rami's a good show. Season 2 is out now. You guys check it out.
Yeah, it's a great show. It is a fascinating cultural slice of life, and Rami's brilliant in it. You were in the pilot, dude.
I'm in the first episode.
So great. It's so great. We were watching it and we were like, wait, is that Julio? Because I think you had told me you were in it, but I didn't know when it would be. So we weren't like on the lookout for you. And sure enough, the first episode of the whole series, there you were.
I look different too, right? Like
you look really tall. Stuff. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
For some reason, you look super tall and you look like the character. You're like this New York kind of like hard mouthed douchebag.
Greasy borough guy with big, I had those big earrings, dude. I wore those for the audition. It's funny. This we're eating falafel.
Yeah.
So I brought a falafel into the audition. And you know, just because I know Rami and stuff, it didn't mean that they don't make you audition still. So I still had to do right. it. And like, I think I could have easily not gotten it. But anyway, brought a falafel, ate it during the audition, did it during the callback. And the other guy did too. And, you know, we ended up getting it. So I think that a lot of the time in acting, people get jaded and they act like doing shit like that is going overboard. And that's like hacky or something. But I don't believe that.
Yeah, so, dude. I guess that's a really interesting point, because I've gone to auditions where I've seen dudes dressed up in like a full suit and tie, and the directive was like, you know, dress okay, or like dress well, and I'm in there and I'm wearing a polo shirt and I'm like, this is fucking try hard, and sure enough, I don't get the part. So it's like, who's the loser? Who's the idiot then? You know,
dude. Totally. And honestly, there's something like about acting that is completely like, it takes all of your like power and ability away. Like, you're just this like pawn. So I think it's fun to have fun with it. Like, you know, take the time and dress up or do whatever you think, make a choice. You know what I mean? Even if there's, like you said, being a comedian, like it's hard to balance out the cynicism with the, like, I need to be eager and try here.
Right. Right.
But
Who the fuck knows? Well, that's our episode for today, folks. Thanks for joining us. As always, I'm Francis Ellis. He's Giulio Gallerati. G, any final thoughts?
Dude, go check out King of Staten Island.
Hell yeah.
Just came out. A bunch of our friends are in it. Carly Aquilino and Ricky Velez, who both been on the podcast. And I'm sure there's people that we're missing.
Derek Gaines is in it. We haven't had him on, but
Guion, Bill Burr. Price worked on it. Dave Cyrus, Bill Burr, obviously Pete.
It's really good. Marissa Tomei, Bill Burr. I mean, everybody's really great. It's fascinating.
Solid Judd Apatow project. Go check out our YouTube channel. We have all the full episodes on YouTube. Even if you just want to leave it in the background and give us some streams, we'd appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And please like and review our podcast. That really helps us. And you guys are the best. Thanks so much. It's Oops the Podcast. We'll see you next week.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's pear.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.